Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. If I say baseball bat to you,
yeah,
what's the first thing that comes to mind?
It's a bat used in baseball.
That's the first thing that comes to mind to you?
Well, it's a cosh.
Yes. That's what I was getting
for
at.
For us, it's a cosh.
Exactly. For I was going to say for me, but for us, a baseball bat is a weapon. It's just not played over here. If someone has a baseball bat over here, it's by your door as a weapon.
By your door or in your boot. And I got taught from a young age, buy yourself a baseball and put it in the boot. So then if the cops pull you and you've got a bat, as long as you have a ball, they can't do you.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Mm. That sounds a bit flimsy.
Why?
It's just like someone told me kind of thing. You know, that kind of
yeah,
way?
Yeah, like I were a teenager when I was told that. But but it does make sense. You could just say, I've just been to the park to smack a ball about.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You can say if the ball was attached to someone, but...
What?
What? No, but don't you think that's funny? You know, because obviously like in America, it's such a big thing. It's their favourite sport.
Yeah.
I might just be making that up. Mm. Their favourite pastime. Is that what they say?
Pastime.
Pastime. Activity. Hobby.
Yeah.
Game to play.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who plays baseball. I've never met a soul who plays baseball.
You don't play that over here.
No, but there's people who play American football. It's not massively popular. Now, it's gotten more popular. But there's people who play American football. Baseball? No, we never bothered with it.
Like, at school, we played rounders.
Yeah.
That's very similar, I think.
I think it's in the ballpark. Huh?
Yeah, I think it's like a cross between baseball and cricket.
Yeah.
Rounders.
That's another sport I just can't be arsed with.
Yeah.
Cricket. Tell you what else makes a good weapon. A hurl. That's baseball more Irish
bat.
Now.
Baseball bat with nails in it. Wait, it doesn't have to be a baseball bat. Just get a stick and put some nails in it.
What if it's a aluminium bat? Them fuckers.
You could weld them on.
You could. This took a turn. No, but you get what I mean. Like, baseball's just not a thing over here. Yet you can easily get a baseball bat.
Yeah, but it's only the same as cricket isn't a thing in America, but I bet you can get a cricket bat.
Do you think?
I thought so.
Is cricket not a thing in America?
No.
I know it's not as popular, but is it not a thing?
No, it's like the UK.
India,
Australia.
That's about it.
Yeah, pretty much it. It's a dying sport, but good. It's shy.
I knew someone who used to carry a hurl around, specifically as a weapon.
What, did he have people after him?
I didn't associate with them myself now, but I knew of them. Do you know, it wouldn't be unusual to see them walking around with it.
Probably always owed someone money.
Or was looking for their money.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Where did this come from anyway?
It just popped into my head the other day and I thought, isn't that funny? If I see a baseball bat in someone's house, I know it's a weapon. There's not a second would I think, oh, that's mad, they play baseball. I don't know anyone else who plays baseball. I know it's a weapon immediately.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a baseball bat.
No, I don't.
I have a metal bar.
Right.
I didn't buy the metal bar intending for it to be
no
self-defense for the house.
Yeah.
I bought a car jack and it had this big, heavy metal bar as a handle. And when I got rid of the car jack, I kept the bar. So I was like, if someone came into house, that'd take the kneecap out.
Hmm. Well, Norman's not doing much to help defend the place, so we need something.
No.
No.
He's just a... Like a an
he's
air raid.
Ornamental.
It's just an air raid siren.
Yeah, pretty
he
much.
He lets me know someone's coming.
But the problem is, if they got into the house, Norman would just try to cuddle them.
Yeah.
He's the biggest flirt.
Yeah. But even without Norman, we'd know if someone was approaching the house because... So Megan's dad is obsessed with solar lights, the sensor ones. Around the perimeter of our house alone, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5. And they're like floodlights.
Yeah, so Neil, my dad gave Neil some solar lights the other day. Like, oh, do you want them? You can put them up. So Neil was like, oh yeah, grand. We actually want to get some new ones. The current ones we have, they're not catching enough sun. Grand.
Yeah.
So Neil installed them yesterday and we're sat down there in the evening having our dinner. And I just look out the window and go, it's like a fucking rave outside. They were flashing like fuck. And I said, oh, Neil, I think you need to move them. I think they're setting the other one off. And it's just... And then I went out to check it after I finished my food. I couldn't even enjoy my food because it was just, like I said, just lights going nuts outside. Yeah. Very distracting. But anyway, I went outside after my food, had a look, and it wasn't setting it off. They were just on a setting to flash.
Yeah, I've never known.
What's the point of that? What do you want that for?
Yeah. So then I had to get up on a stepladder on gravel to...
In the dark
to press a button on the back of it to change the setting with it flickering in my face. Good job I ain't got epilepsy. I'd have been dead.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not steady on that gravel.
Well, gravel doesn't tend to be, does it?
No, you get halfway up the ladder and it starts fucking tilting and sinking.
A bit of a tilt on it, wasn't there?
So that's the riveting conversation you've got for this week. Baseball bats.
Yeah, no, it was just something that was on my mind. And I wanted to see if you would go the same direction I was. I was honestly just sat there one day thinking about it, and kind of going, no, like, if someone has a baseball bat, it's purely a weapon over here.
Yeah, but I want to know, why were you thinking about a baseball bat?
I don't know. I can't tell. Were we watching something American there playing baseball? I don't fucking know.
I wasn't.
Was I watching something where someone got the shite bit out of them with a baseball bat? Possibly.
Yeah, that is possible. Yeah.
Either way, that's something to think about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we call it over here a kosh. If it's like...
A baton.
A weapon. It's a kosh. Koshed him. Well, you wouldn't really say that, would you?
I've never actually heard that name.
No. Took a good koshing.
Do you want me to try and work it into an episode?
Yeah. It took a ruddy good koshing.
Koshed the fucking head off of him.
Yeah. Koshed his bollocks in. Right. Well, that's enough of...
Bullshit.
Council weaponry. We actually have a shout out.
We do indeed.
So this week we have Timmy.
Or Timothy.
Timothy, yeah.
Timothy.
What?
Timothy.
Yeah.
Timothy.
Yeah.
Have a bit of respect.
Timothy.
Timothy.
Ah, Timmy!
That is going to deafen people.
There was another one I thought of. I thought this was a good one. Timbo Slice.
Very good.
No, after Kimbo Slice.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace. Timbo.
Timbo Slice.
And if he was Irish, that's what you lot would call him. Something like that.
Timbo.
Timbo.
Timo. I mean, I was kind of going that way. I was going Timo and then, you know, the usual Timmy.
Tim Tam.
That's a chocolate bar, isn't it? That's like a little biscuit, kind of like a penguin Australian, or something.
It's supposed to be the be all and end all.
It's like
of
a fucking
Australia.
Penguin, I think.
Yeah, shy.
I've never actually had them.
It's nothing special.
Not to write home about, is
they're
it?
They're not shy.
Yeah.
It's just. Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't want to associate them with Tim Tams.
This isn't about Australia. They've had enough.
Why, I was going to say, it usually is about Australia.
No, they've had enough.
Okay. This is about.
Out of us.
Timothy.
Yeah. This is Timothy's moment.
Tim.
The other thing, what popped into my head, so the Brits all like this one.
Why gotta be British?
What?
Why gotta be British? Can the rest of us not enjoy this?
A lot of people outside the UK wouldn't even know about it.
Okay. Do I know about it?
Yes.
Well then.
Timothy Spall.
Yes.
So we'll call him Barry.
Barry.
Barry Taylor.
Let us know if you get the reference. But again, I stand by my point. I am outside of the UK.
Yeah.
And I get the reference.
Yeah. No, that's because you were... No, it's not.
I watched it. Look at you. That's because of me. Me.
So what we're settling on? Timbo?
Barry.
Barry,
yes. Thank you, Barry. We appreciate you.
Barry Taylor. So, what have you got for us today?
Well, today, Neil, we are going to be talking about the murder of Patricia Wylie. To set the scene, this case takes place in Northern Ireland in 1944, where US soldiers were stationed. It's estimated that about 300,000 Americans were based in Northern Ireland or travelled through between 1942 and World War II's end. Although some did not welcome their presence and there was some more serious incidents, including murder, it was said that overall they were met with positivity. And yes, these occurrences are particularly jarring, especially when it's attributed to persons who were, you know, associated with serving and protecting. But when you put it into perspective of how many soldiers had passed through during that time, the incident rates were relatively low. Of course, that is not to downplay the serious nature of these things. On the more positive side, the soldiers put on games of American football and baseball, and the proceeds for these games were donated towards hospitals, and a fund was set up for the children orphaned as a result of the Belfast Blitz.
So, a couple of things. That's where the baseball thing is. Were you researching this?
Oh, must have been, yeah.
Could be that. And could you imagine how hard it was for an American? I struggle to understand some Northern Irish. Like, when they've got a thick accent, it's fucking thick.
Mm.
You imagine someone from Alabama trying to understand someone from out in the sticks up north.
What do you think would be worse? Like a strong Northern Irish accent or a strong Yorkshire accent?
Northern Irish.
Do you think?
Yeah, because even when we say fla, you know...
Fla.
Fla. They're like flur.
Flur.
Like you would never think a bag of flur.
Bag of flur. Murr.
Like you think for an American, right? If they were in Yorkshire, yeah, I'd go... Ah, it's a shit situation. Whereas, it's a shite situation.
Mm.
That's what they'd say up north.
I think he can understand that.
Situation.
Situation. And I think he could decipher it. Now, as well as the football and baseball games, the soldiers also made toys for the children of the Royal Victoria Hospital during Christmas time of 1942 and 1943.
That's nice.
It is nice.
Really nice.
That's the positive side of things, Neil.
Yeah. But this is where it goes to shit.
Exactly. Now, one soldier who was stationed in County Tyrone, Northern Ireland, was a man named William Harrison. William was from Haverhill, Ohio, and was said to have come from an abusive and dysfunctional family. His mother was a heavy drinker who had given birth to him when she was just 14 years of age, and he had a volatile relationship with his quick-to-anger father.
That's good to go in army then, isn't it?
As a result, William was described as a, quote, sad sack little guy with a dependency on alcohol, which started in his teens. And after he enlisted in the army, his troubles continued to follow him. While stationed in England, William was court-martialed 5 times for being absent without official leave, and he received disciplinary action for his drunkenness. In 1943, he spent 6 weeks in a psychiatric facility being treated for amnesia. This was after he was found in a cinema, unable to determine where he was or who he was.
He was just pissed. Wait, so after all this, they put him back out?
Yeah, exactly. So you might think because of this, they would discharge William, surely. Yeah. No, instead they decide to ship him off to Northern Ireland as a reserve.
Right.
No good.
And they wonder where it went wrong.
I mean, it's pretty fucking clear. Like you said, he shouldn't have really been there in the first place.
But is at that age, he's going to get drafted. Especially back then.
While stationed in County Tyrone, 22-year-old William became known to a couple named Patrick and Mary Wiley in the summer of 1944. Patrick was a fisherman, and he and Mary lived on a small farm with their four children, Sadie, Patricia, Charles, and Margaret. It was in the pub where Patrick first met William, and he noticed that he appeared lonely. And after speaking with him, Patrick learned that William was feeling homesick. And so, being the decent man that Patrick was, he invited William to the family's home for a cup of tea.
Homesick? Northern County Tyrone is very similar to Ohio.
I've also heard that, believe it or not.
It's well known.
It's common knowledge down the pub. It's
common knowledge down miners' arms, yeah.
So, that's lovely. You know, someone feeling a bit homesick, he was on his own, you know, and especially, yes, there was tension between the soldiers.
Yeah.
So to invite him into the home, it was a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
The problem was William kind of overstayed his welcome a little bit. He ended up staying with the family for 2 days, and for this he received a 6-month detention for his unauthorized absence. But he was released on the 23rd of September after just 3 months. Now, just a few days later, on the afternoon of the 25th of September 1944, William had spent the day drinking heavily in Dorman's pub before stopping by the family's cottage in Killiculpy.
Killiculpy?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it right? Ireland as a whole, what is your obsession with the word kill?
What's your obsession with ton? Everything in England is ton.
No, it's not.
Ham as well. You'd love ham.
Hampton. Southampton.
Northampton.
Northampton.
North.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but we have a lot of field.
You do,
like,
yeah.
Sheffield.
You're from a field,
Chesterfield.
Yes.
Mansfield.
Yeah.
And then we'll have something like Matlock, which is normal sounding. What's the one you took the piss out of not long back?
Scunthorpe.
Scunthorpe?
That's one of the, like, the worst sounding place names I've ever heard.
Scunthorpe's all right.
Scunthorpe.
Yeah.
Would you pick it if you were...
Mosborough.
If you were to name a place, would you ever, in your wildest dreams, have Scunthorpe, even in your top 50?
Yeah, I don't know where the name comes from. Maybe we can look that up. You know, like Sheffield is from a river. That's as far as my knowledge goes on geography of the UK.
So, you know, maybe people in glass houses.
What do you mean?
You're there ripping the piss out of Irish place names.
Yeah. But it's the word kill.
What's wrong with it?
It's
very in keeping for the show, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the day in question, William had arrived at the pub at 8 a.m. and while there, he was said to have consumed 15 beers, a small gin with each, and 2 port wines.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, he could fucking throw it back.
And to say he's used to American piss.
Oh, I bet he was on his arse over here. It was about 5 p.m. by the time he arrived at the family's home. Once there, he offered to take their 7-year-old daughter, Patricia, more affectionately known as Patsy, to the shop to buy some minerals and sweets, as well as a present for the family to thank them for their hospitality. Mary was initially hesitant and said that maybe it would be better if he waited until Patrick arrived home from work. Although William had been drinking heavily, Mary said that he did not appear to have taken a drink and that his conduct was, quote, very nice. And remember, the family were acquainted with William and possibly felt, you know, a sense of ease with him being a soldier. And after about half an hour, she did allow Patsy to set off with him, hand in hand.
Yeah, because I'll probably just see him. It's Uncle Billy.
Well, Mary could have never known that this would be the last time that she would ever see Patricia alive.
Before you get into, like, the real heavy stuff, You've gone to the shop for minerals. What's that mean?
Minerals, fizzy drinks.
You call that minerals?
Yeah. Minerals, fizzy drinks, pop, soda.
Huh. Never heard it called minerals.
You've never heard minerals?
No. Pop. Never heard. Obviously, I've heard of minerals, but not to go to the shop to buy minerals.
Bear in mind, this is in the 40s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
People tend to use some. Words tend to change.
That must be hard on, say, especially someone like an American who has been shipped off for the war and they're gone for a long period of time and they're drinking all this nice beer. And then they have to go back to America. And it's like, well, what the fuck do I drink now? Can't drink that.
As William and Patsy left the family home, they decided to take a shortcut through the fields. It was within these fields that William decided to strike. He attacked Patsy, sexually assaulting her and beating her before finally strangling her to death. Following the murder, William left 7-year-old Patsy behind a haystack, cleaned himself up, and went to the pub.
Went to the pub?
Yep. Well, I'll tell you another detail that is very unsettling. Before the brutal attack on Patsy, they had run into Patricia's 9-year-old sister Sadie, who was out collecting their rations. William offered for Sadie to join them, but she declined. And Sadie was the one who William had initially offered to take to the shops that day.
Oh, so he was either going to do it to her or both?
Well, so Sadie was the one he clearly initially had as a target.
Yeah.
But then even after deciding to take Patricia, once he saw Sadie, he was still willing to.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just fucking horrifying. And can you imagine how she felt after the fact?
Yeah. Well, no.
Now, at the pub, it was noted by the owner's son, 19-year-old Peter Dorman, that William's left hand appeared to be swollen. He tried to explain this away by saying that he had gotten into a fight with another soldier. Peter's brother, 18-year-old Michael, he said that when he met William on the road, he noted the cuts to his hands and that his trouser knees were muddied. Back at the Wiley's home, panic set in when Patsy did not arrive home as expected. They contacted the police, and as the news began to spread, a search ensued. It was shortly after midnight that Patsy's body was found, less than half a mile from her home. She'd been left amongst a pile of hay, semi-clothed. There was bruising to her neck, and her face was bloodied and swollen. The basket which Patsy had taken with her was found not far from her body. The four young men who found her were Peter and Michael Dorman, who had earlier noticed William, as well as Bernard Hagen and Daniel Montague. Michael said of the discovery, quote, "The four of us had been searching for about half an hour. It was a very dark night and we had to use torches. We went into a field where there was about 4 ricks of hay. We searched around the stacks for a while and then I saw a basket. We thought the girl must have been somewhere near the place. Then we saw a mound of tossed hay lying near one of the stacks. One of the others began to pull the hay back, and I saw the girl lying face down. Her face was covered in blood, her left eye was swollen, and she was half nude."
And there wouldn't be any therapy back then?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing to bear in mind. These are just 4 young lads who have heard that a young girl's gone missing, and now they have to deal with. Actually, you know, obviously they want to find her,
yeah.
But you're never prepared to see that. At about 5 a.m. the following morning, William was arrested back at base, where he was found passed out in a jeep. He later confessed to the sexual assault and murder. He said that he had killed her after she had threatened to tell her mother what he had done. He said that this made him, quote, white hot mad.
Oh yeah, it's her fault.
I don't know what to say about it. Like, it's so fucking horrific. But then, you know, to picture this little girl being, you know, her first thing's, I need to tell my mum what happened.
Yeah.
And that's his response.
Yeah.
After William was examined by two psychiatrists, it was concluded that he had a, quote, constitutional psychopathic personality disorder exacerbated by alcoholism. On the 18th of November 1944, William's trial began. William pleaded not guilty through diminished responsibility due to his intoxicated state, as well as his traumatic childhood playing a factor, leaving him without sufficient moral awareness. Meaning, William did not know right from wrong and did not understand the severity of the offence.
I'm not saying in this case.
Yeah.
But you hear about it so much where people use, even if it's lighthearted, you know, say we got pissed up tonight, yeah? And I said to you, I don't know.
Let's go beat the shite out of someone with a baseball bat.
Well, I wasn't going to go that far.
Okay.
I said to you, you sicken me.
Fair.
Yeah. And then passed out. And then the next morning, you go,
what the hell was that?
Last night, you said that I sicken you. Oh, it's the drink. I hate that.
Yeah. I've known people who are just like a completely different person with drinking them. I think we've all encountered that at some point or another.
Yeah.
And I just fucking distance myself from those people.
Yeah.
There's definitely, you know, people get a little bit looser in what they're saying.
Yeah.
That's one thing. And to me, that kind of more like the kind of where the line is it's a bit embarrassing or they've overshared something.
Yeah. Like,
but when you can just flip your personality, it's like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. So I used to be mates with a couple and the bird would always say, I hate it when he gets pissed because he turns into a knobhead. And I used to say, because he's a knobhead.
Yeah.
He's a knobhead.
The thing is, even
drink
if,
doesn't do that.
Well, no. But what I'm saying to you is, even if they would never behave that way sober, if they know they get like that with a drink.
Yeah.
And they keep doing, so they go, well, I can't remember it. It's like, but you're inflicting this on other people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. What? No, people use drink as an excuse for fucking everything. And
yeah.
It's really not. It's like, right, it's a bit like, you know, like, I don't know how I can explain it, but, well, it comes down to, I drink, you drink, like, who do you think you're fucking kidding? Like, it's not drink affects everyone that much differently. No, it doesn't. It's you exaggerating it.
No, I don't agree with that. I think there are people who it does change them. And, you know, in William's case, he was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He did have a dependency on alcohol. I don't want to downplay, you know, the severity of that.
Mm.
Absolutely. But yeah, no, there are people, like I said, even if it is, they are changing and they don't even realize. Well, it's being told to you, even if you don't recognize it in that moment, you clearly have an issue with drink and you shouldn't drink. You're choosing to continue that.
Like, yeah,
again, I'm not talking about someone who is an alcoholic. I'm talking about the people who don't give a fuck or they behave in a night out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Everyone else has to pick up the pieces.
I just think when someone says, oh, don't like it when he drinks, he's a knobhead. No, he's a knobhead.
Well, I would agree with you in the fact that if you're continuing to drink, you're a fucking knobhead. You will be happy to hear, though, following an assessment from a US Army medical officer, William was deemed to be sane and was, in fact, able to distinguish between right and wrong. So he didn't get out of that one.
I didn't think he was going to. Really?
Really?
No.
Does it not concern you a bit, the fact that he's a soldier, that, you know, sometimes there's allowances made?
Oh, yeah, sometimes they do.
Well, like I said, yeah. That was actually from the US Army medical officer going, no.
Yeah.
Pack it in, like.
Yeah.
During the trial, Patsy's father, Patrick, broke down multiple times while giving evidence. He recalled finding William in the pub at about 7:30 p.m. and asking him where his daughter was. William told him that he had left her at the door of Malin's public house with a bottle of lemonade and two lollipops. Can you imagine that frantic, you know, where's my daughter? You were last with her.
Yeah.
And he's like, I left her at the door of that pub.
Yeah.
Like, You're here drinking. My daughter's missing. Where the fuck is she? And bear in mind, he finished work. Patrick finished work at about 7. This is 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, half 7. Patricia left at 5. This is all fairly quick.
Yeah, yeah.
But they knew something was wrong.
And I'm guessing he wasn't drinking in the same pub. What he said, he left her stood outside.
No, he was drinking in Dorman's, but he said he left her outside Malin's.
So they must have questioned that and gone, well, why did you leave her there to come to this pub?
It's, I mean, look, we know it's fucking bullshit. Mm. But I can't imagine, you know, because Patrick had gone to the pub, seen him there, gone in and gone, where's my daughter?
Yeah, yeah.
And could you imagine just seeing him sat there at a fucking pint? Pissed out of his fucking tree.
Yeah.
William said, quote, I do not remember if with one hand or if I used both. I was squeezing her throat hard. She did not make any sound. But I do not know if she could have or not.
She's not going to make a fucking sound if you're strangling her. What a stupid fucking thing to say.
It's just something about this case and the way he speaks. You know, I'm guessing because he was always just pissed up, he kind of just said it more, almost more matter of fact, which yeah. in a sense is good to have the details there, but it's very hard to hear. And, you know, kind of like, I can't remember if it was one hand or two, but I was squeezing hard. I don't even know if she could make a noise. You know yeah. what I mean? The coroner said, quote, there are some inquests more tragic than others. But I feel that this is one of the saddest cases that any jury could be called upon to investigate. The coroner also addressed Patrick and said, quote, we all feel very deeply for you. In expressing our disgust at this terrible tragedy, I think I am right in saying that, although we feel it deeply, the Americans feel it even more so. I can only extend to you our sympathy and hope that Providence will help you, your wife and family to bear the burden which has been so suddenly thrust upon you. May God bless you. After half an hour of deliberation, a verdict was returned. William was found guilty and sentenced to be hanged. Over in the States, his parents appealed to the White House in an effort to spare their son's life. Their attempts were unsuccessful.
Good.
On the 7th of April, 1945, William was due to be hanged at Shepton Mallet Prison in Somerset. When asked if he had any last words, he said, quote, only that you try to explain things to my mom and dad, and I am happy to pay for my crime.
Explain what? They know what you've done.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what he's getting at with that. You know?
I hope the ungin buys bollocks first.
Well, Neil, the executioner was Thomas Pierpoint of the very well-known Pierpoint family of executioners. I don't know if you remember, but we previously mentioned them. His nephew, Albert, he was the prick who was often reported to have said that he loved hanging Irishmen.
Oh, that bastard.
Yeah, so just to refresh your memory, he's reported to have said, quote, I love hanging Irishmen. They always go quietly and without trouble. They're Christian men and they believe they're going to a better place. No good, is it?
No.
But this is Thomas, not Albert.
Mm-hmm.
So Thomas was a very experienced executioner. So it came as a bit of a surprise when the execution was less than perfect. Instead of simply snapping his neck, causing a quick, relatively painless death, William's body swung for 20 minutes as he was strangled by the rope.
Done that on purpose.
This is
the thing. Strangled, yeah.
Thomas was getting on a bit by now and close to retirement, so it could have been that he just wasn't really on his A game anymore. Or, like what you think and I think, quite a few other people think, he knew what William had done and wanted to make him suffer.
Yeah, good.
Dave Cable, a historian of the prison, said, quote, the murder of a child was, even by the grim standards of capital punishment, a uniquely shocking crime. It is entirely plausible that this weighed on Pierpoint's mind, and in my opinion, it is likely, in this instance, he cared less about efficiency and a little more about retribution.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. It's got nothing to do with his age, you know?
I mean, it could have been. I'd like to think he was like, you know what? Fuck
nah,
you.
He set it up.
Yeah.
I'd have shouted, squirm, you bastard.
Would you have? Yeah.
Go on. Shit down your leg.
Okay.
Go on. Defecate.
That's funnier.
To be honest, if I, right, in all seriousness, if I was there, I'd be going, do you enjoy that? You enjoying that? That's what she had to fucking go through. You bastard.
You might have been Sean Bean there, didn't you?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? What do, like, what?
By the way, I say bastard.
Yeah.
What? I am from Yorkshire. Like,
no, it's like the fact that you would say it's like a statement as someone is being strangled to death by a rope, you bastard.
Yeah.
So, like we mentioned at the start of the episode, there was some incidents among US soldiers. But, you know, again, considering the number that were stationed over here, you know, the incident rate was fairly low. But this type of crime among US personnel in the UK was described as extremely rare. Northern Ireland historian Alan Freeburn said, quote, Private William Harrison was the only American who was convicted of child murder and one of three hanged for child rape in the European theatre of operations in the Second World War. William was also one of 18 prisoners executed at Shepton Mallet Prison during the 3 years it was used solely by the US military during World War II.
Wait, so there was two other, did you say there was two other American soldiers who'd been hung for?
Yeah, William was the only one, the only American convicted for child murder, and he was one of three hanged for child rape.
So two other American soldiers
raped
a child.
Mm-hmm.
Not good, is it?
No, it's not good. It's fucking horrific. But it's horrific whenever that happens.
Yeah.
You got to, like I said, 300,000.
Yeah, yeah.
In the span of X amount of years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, it's the same as the way you look at cops, you know, coppers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're there to fucking protect you. And
yes, that's like what I mentioned earlier. Although it is a very small amount of these soldiers who are doing these terrible things,
yeah,
it's so much more shocking to us when we perceive them as you're there to protect, to, you know, help us to serve, you know, all of these, you know, like I said, just positive, protective qualities.
Yeah.
We forget that they're just normal people. And like you said, William made it through.
Yeah.
So why the hero worship?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's not to, again, downplay the service and fair play to anyone putting themselves in that position. But at the end of the day, it's a normal, everyday person.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the same with, you know, me at Airsoft. Anyone can do it.
It's exactly the same thing. I'm glad you brought that up.
Why?
Because it's so fucking ridiculous.
Why is it?
You're comparing serving in the army to you going fucking airsofting.
Like,
what?
Not.
Say it again for the people in the back.
No, because you do go through like military drills and stuff like that.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, got your six and all that.
What?
Well, that means I've got your back.
Okay.
Like, I'm watching your back.
Yeah. And that's equivalent to what a person has to go through in the military.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm just saying anyone, like, especially when it's like a world war, anyone's getting drafted, you know.
So you're saying you're ready for it because of airsoft?
I'm more ready for it because of airsoft than I was before I did airsoft.
Yeah.
Anyone who does airsoft will agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You want to stand on that point, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
On both legs.
Unlike William, who was legless a lot of the time.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Well done with that one.
It was right there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So that's the end of William. But sadly, the torment felt by the Wiley family did not end with his execution. Some blamed them for William's actions. It was said that while travelling on the bus, Patsy's mother, Mary, overheard a conversation between two men. It went something like, "It's a shame about that wee girl, but that's what you get when you're a Yankee lover." So not only were they subjected to scrutiny, but they also had to deal with rumours that William had not been executed and was instead sent out of the country.
Yankee lover?
Mm-hmm. Again, not everyone was happy about American soldiers being stationed.
But blaming the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Blaming them for his actions.
That's fucking rough.
Mm.
I don't know if you've got this down, but the four lads who found her, did they end up being all right?
I didn't hear much else about them.
Okay. Thought I'd ask, because so they wouldn't have had any help. You know, after it.
Following the loss of her daughter, Mary became consumed by depression and the stigmatization that followed. Equally, there were American soldiers who were treated poorly as a result of William's crimes. One soldier spoke of having doors slammed in his face and a stone thrown at his head. But he said that he didn't blame them as he was, quote, a symbol of something absolutely horrible that happened to this community.
Nah, you can't call yourself a symbol of it.
No, but he understands that for the people there, they're seeing that uniform and they're just associating it. Like, had you not been here, this wouldn't have happened. And of course it's not right and, you know, these other soldiers aren't to blame. But it's nice that he can understand why. He's not just turning on people, you know? You got to remember, you know, like the coroner said it himself, it's not just horrific for the family and the people of the community, but the other Americans who were there, you're giving us a bad name.
Yeah. Like, imagine if you were one of the other Yanks and you were like, that was my mate.
Yeah.
Like,
I wonder what any of the soldiers' mates at him were like, I fucking hate that guy. I get that feeling that they're like, fucking William.
I bet there were some American soldiers who, when that happened and that came out, they were like, knew it of him. There's something off about him.
Yeah.
There's quite a few people, obviously we're not going to name them, but there's quite a few people me and you have said, give it 10 years, something is coming out about them.
Oh yeah.
There's something off about
him. I've got quite a few marks on my calendar waiting for it. So Patsy's sister, Sadie, she was the one that William initially wanted to target.
Yeah.
She suffered greatly with survivor's guilt, so much so that she could not bear to stay within the area and walk past the field where her sister had been murdered. Sadie later emigrated to New York, trained as a dental hygienist, married and had three children. But she could never escape the trauma, which would also have an effect on her children.
I'd have thought the last place she'd have emigrated to were America. But at least it weren't Ohio.
But I'm not saying that she had any issues with Americans or America. You know, it was much more, I can't see that and think about, you know.
Oh yeah, but I mean in hearing the American accent.
Yeah.
You know, been around that. Like, she might have been better off going to somewhere like Sweden. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then again, they talk American, so could have just come down to Sheffield.
No, she's been through enough, Neil.
Okay.
Right? So, like I said, you know, her trauma did have an effect on her children. And this was something that her daughter Annie links to her choice to become a mental health therapist. Annie said, quote, "My mother never talked about it. It was too painful. When I was roughly 12, I saw a picture my granny had sent to my mom. She had sent a photo of a new headstone she had placed for my grandpa. I looked at the photo and saw, and his daughter, Patricia, aged 7.5, died September 25th, 1944. I asked, who's Patricia? My mom was at the stove, didn't turn around and said, "That's my sister. She drowned and I don't want to talk about it." That meant do not press the issue. I didn't, and there was no one else to ask.
Well, it weren't really cold, was it? What do you mean that meant don't press the issue? Yeah, she's saying I don't want to talk about it.
I think she means that the entire thing of like she's literally at the stove, did not turn. Like not batting a fucking eye.
Mm.
You know, it's the whole, all of her body language.
Yeah.
Is don't fucking even.
I was going to say, it's not fucking cold. It's actually quite blatant.
No, but you get what she means. Like, would you, if you asked your mother something and she went, she gave you an answer, she went, yeah, I'm going Tuesday, but I don't want to talk about it. You'd be like, okay, fair enough. But if you asked her something, she didn't move and she said, I'm going on Tuesday, I do not want to talk about it.
I'd be like,
you'd be like, right. Okay.
Well, I know I wouldn't be like, is that cold?
It wasn't until a few years later that Annie's father actually did tell her what happened, but he also said to never bring it up to her mother. Quote, I don't think my mother was ever as happy as she could have been because this has always been holding over her head. There are behaviours I look at now and say, this is survivor's guilt. Over in the States, there's no evidence of Patsy. You don't walk past the field every day. Now 8 decades on from the murder, Patsy's niece and Sadie's daughter Annie, she has been digging into the case. Annie has sifted through the family lore, read through the 660-page trial transcript, and gathered testimonies. She said, quote, I've been investigating this case on and off for 31 years. I decided early on that this horrible story needed to be written down so the truth can finally be known to all. The worst part for our family, the leading cause of generational trauma, has been the myths that still exist today. Annie spoke with both William's defense attorney and an American soldier who was present during questioning. Both said that he showed no emotion and that he had simply killed her, quote, because she was going to tell. With all the information she has gained, Annie hopes to publish a book on the case. And I tell you, I do look forward to reading this book and hopefully coming back to this case and covering it in more detail because there's really not a lot out there.
Yeah, yeah.
In April of 2026, Annie gave a lecture at Shepton Mallet. She aims to highlight the need for awareness and discussion for those who serve in the military with certain psychological conditions. Quote, they need to do tighter screenings and you need to know what happens when you put somebody in the army and they devastate an entire community. She hopes to bring this lecture to military training bases in the US. So that's kind of like what you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
You know, how the fuck is he getting in? And Annie is trying to make this a conversation. Let's fucking talk about it. Let's be aware of this.
But like, yeah, because even nowadays, like they'll give like physical and mental assessments, but they won't look at your background. And
well, I can't comment. I don't know what the process is, but I mean, it's quite clear. It hasn't always been the case, and I would be surprised if it was. And then obviously, it's a whole other kettle of fish treatment after the fact.
Yeah,
for people who have served.
Yeah, actually, I wonder if they don't even get a mental assessment going in. I wonder if they only get a mental assessment once they start acting the fool.
Once they start acting the fool. I mean, again,
I think it's just physical.
I don't know. I can't comment. I'd imagine if they do, it's a very, very basic one. Any of our listeners who maybe have served, if you want to shed any light, you know, we'd love to know. We'd love to learn about it.
Yeah.
Feel free to give us a shout.
Unless you're a fool.
Now, like I said, Annie was at Shepton Mallet giving her lecture.
Mm-hmm.
Also, while at the prison, Annie entered the execution chamber along with some of her relatives. She said, quote, I help my clients to find closure amidst trauma. Well, I can tell you, we felt closure. We gave Patsy justice and her voice back. She's not just a name on a tombstone anymore.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this one. Shocking as it might be to you. Yeah, I'd never heard of this.
Well, I only discovered it very recently. And I felt it was a very important one to cover.
Yeah.
And I think it's amazing what Annie's doing and trying to get more light shed on the case. And yeah. Fair play to her. Patsy's funeral took place at St. Patrick's Church in Mullinahoo on the 27th of September. Hundreds gathered at the Requiem Mass, including her fellow pupils and American soldiers. Patsy's school remained closed that day as a mark of respect. While addressing the congregation, Father Regan said that although priests are familiar with deaths in all shapes, the circumstances surrounding the death of this little girl were of a different character.
That were always a weird feeling at school, you know.
If someone, parent died or a pupil died or something.
Yeah, if you got the day off school for it, it were like, I'm so happy I've got this day off school. But like, look at the reason why you've got the day off school.
Yeah.
But you're like, this is great.
Yeah.
Because as a kid, you don't give a shit, do you?
Well, I actually never experienced that. No. There was, when I was in school, there was someone in my year, his mother passed, and basically his entire class, you know, the different tutor groups, his entire tutor group was off to go to the funeral, but the rest of us were still in school.
Oh.
But it was just one of those, it was just accepted, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the only one we ever had was when I was about, I'd say I was year 9.
I need the age, I don't know what that means.
So I'd have been, would have been 13.
Okay, it's so like 13. Start of secondary school kind of thing.
I was 13. We actually saw it, me and a bunch of my mates. So it were pissing it down. So we were sat, you know, in like a, it's like a bus shelter, but a train station, because it's only a small train station. And we were sat in there. And one of my mates were stood up pacing about.
This is the station that I was at when I came over.
Yeah.
So it's like a small station, like through a village kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of my mates were pacing about and we were all sat down. And he went, fuck is she doing? She's not going to jump. And we were like, what? So we got up and looked. And just as we got up, she must have jumped. And literally as we looked out, train
hit
her. And it were a lad at school, it were his mum.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the only time it happened for us where we got a day off over.
So as insensitive as you sounded earlier, given that you went through the trauma of witnessing it, you know, I can understand why you would be happy to have the time off.
Yeah. I don't know if it was solely because it was a parent of a student, but the train station was very close to our school.
Right, yeah.
So there was a lot of police activity. That, you know, there were fucking tape everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the UK, your funerals are like a few weeks later.
Yeah. No, it weren't to do with a funeral. This was the day after it happened.
Okay.
So I think, like I said, I think it was more so, but there was just police everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. It was just that he wanted to traumatise the kids. And obviously for that poor kid,
yeah,
whose parent it was, yeah.
But I know of a lot of kids on that day off, the way they spent that day off was to go down to the train station and watch.
Yeah. I mean, sadly, I'm not surprised, you know.
So they'd have been better getting pulled into a classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing the tone down even further.
Yeah. We never got help for that either.
They never offered you any type of counselling or anything?
Did they? They might have and we turned it down.
Fucking slander in the school, like. Now, at the time of Patsy's death, her mother was actually heavily pregnant. She gave birth to baby Joe just 17 days following the murder of her daughter.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Although Mary struggled with crippling depression, it was said that it began to lift following a dream that she had. She said that she saw Patsy in this dream, and she was reassured to carry on for the sake of other children.
Well, I was actually just about to say, maybe that was... I'm not saying it's going to be easy. You've just lost your daughter in a fucking horrific way. But could that be a blessing in disguise, but you'd got to give birth so close to it, because could your mind be occupied?
I mean, I think that's very difficult to say. I think for some people, like you said, it could be, you know, I think for some people it could be a blessing in disguise. Other people, that's just more to add onto your plate. I think it really just is going to depend on the situation, isn't it?
Yeah. I think for you it'd pile on, and for me it'd deter.
Deter. Deter the depression.
That's the word, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. It's just, to me, it's a funny choice of words for depression. It's going to deter. It's going to keep it at bay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't focus on one thing, on two things. I have to, so if there's something else, it's like, ooh.
Ooh. On the 22nd of October, 1957, Patsy's father, Patrick, passed away at the age of 59, and her mother, Mary, on the 1st of April, 1988, at the age of 84. Patricia and her parents were buried together at St. Patrick's, Mullinahoo graveyard. As for William, he was buried at the Brookwood Cemetery in Surrey, England, before his body was exhumed in 1949. He was reinterred in a private section for the, quote, dishonoured dead, at the Wazen American Cemetery and Memorial in France. And that is the murder of Patricia Patsy Wiley. Neil, I'm sure you have plenty, but any thoughts you'd care to share? Well, I'm a poet. Neil, I'm a poet.
So what was it you said? He hung for 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was said 20 minutes, yeah.
And I'm going to bring this round, back round to the starter. I hope multiple people, including the American soldiers, pulled out baseball bats and started hitting him like a fucking maraca.
Pinata. I fucking knew you were going to get that word wrong. I had it there ready.
What did I say? Maraca?
Maraca, yeah.
What's a maraca then?
Maraca is, you know, the instruments you shake them.
Well, they could have shook him like a maraca and all. No, but yeah, hit him like a fucking pinata.
Pinata, yeah.
Pinata. You know, I think that would have been good. How's that, Billy? Do you not think... Let people have a fucking go.
Have a whack.
Have a go, yeah.
No.
I would have.
No, I understand the appeal.
Mm.
But, no.
Like I said, I hope they strung him up by his knackers first, then his neck, and then hit him like a maraca. No, hit him like, for fuck's sake, hit him like a piñata.
Yeah. But I mean, I understand what you're saying. I understand the temptation. But I think Pierpoint in this case, you know, he had it fucking covered.
Mm.
You know, he was handling it.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, feelings, opinions you want to share? I mean, it's a fucking truly awful case, you know, from multiple sides. You know, like we said, obviously it's the death of a young girl in one of the most brutal ways imaginable, complete disregard for her.
Yeah.
But also, you know, like we kind of mentioned during the episode, the other side of it, of the soldiers, kind of, they're already in a difficult enough position and kind of being forced into this. And again, I say this both for and against them. They're just normal people, you know, working in a very difficult job.
The only other thing I wanted to say, where, like, I know you touched on it, if there's any way we could support, I think we should, Annie. I'd love to do something with Annie.
I do want to get her book.
Yeah.
When she does go on to publish it, I would love to have her come on. I did look for a contact for her. I'm going to have another look.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it would be wonderful to kind of hear her, you know, for her to, not only is it her family, but she's really dug into this case.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's bringing it to the forefront. And fair play to her.
Yeah.
You got to think for her, for it to be her auntie. Now, obviously, you know, her mother moved to New York. So she didn't have as much of a connection with her family in that sense. But to find out years after the fact that this happened, and it's this kind of dark secret almost, like we don't talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's difficult.
Yeah. And hopefully if we do have her on, she doesn't talk in code.
It's only you who feels this way. She'll say something straight out and you'll be like, well, what do you mean by that exactly? Yeah. You do that to me all the time. I'll be like, so Neil, today we're going to talk about X, Y, and Z. And you'll be like, what do you mean? What do you mean?
Yeah. So, oddity. What genitals is it this time?
No genitals today, Neil.
Okay.
Today we're going to be talking about Tonda Dickerson.
For fuck's sake, no.
What?
You've just said it's not.
No, it's just her name.
Tonda Dickinson.
Dickerson.
Dickerson. Are you taking the piss? You're taking the piss.
Tonda Dickerson. Okay?
Right.
Yeah. The name, that is an unfortunate name given your aversion to penises.
Yeah. See, if you'd have said Dickinson, but it's the fact that it's a woman and you said Dickerson.
Dickerson.
You're taking the piss. Dickerson. That's her name.
Dickerson.
Dick. Right. Right.
Anyway, Tonda Dickerson.
Mm.
In 1999, a woman named Tonda Dickerson was working as a waitress at a Waffle House in Grand Bay, Alabama.
Okay.
On the 7th of March, in lieu of a tip, Tip.
Yeah, I got that.
Tip, Neil.
Yes.
Like a penis.
Yes. There's just no stopping you.
I've got penis on the brain.
Yes.
I swear, I didn't mean for this to even like connect back in.
I've never even heard of a place called Lua. What is it? Lieu of a tip.
In lieu of a tip, I said. Instead of. That's.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
On the 7th of March, in lieu of a tip, one of their regular customers, a man named Edward, gave Tonda a lottery ticket. And this turned out to be a winning ticket, and Tonda was set to receive a windfall of $10 million.
He should get five.
The customer should get five?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is a lot of money. It's a life-changing, eye-watering amount of money. And I'm sure...
Eye-watering? Not eyes-watering. Why are you saying eye-watering?
That's the expression. Eye-watering amount.
Eyes-watering.
Eye-watering, I would say.
Fucking dick on the brain again. Eye-watering.
Eye-watering, that's what you say. It's eye-watering.
What, you only water from one eye?
No, but that's what it is. That's what you say.
Okay.
That's an eyes-watering amount. That sounds off. You wouldn't say eyes-watering. Eye-watering amount.
Hmm.
Anyway, a life-changing... eye or eyes, depending on whether you're me or Neil, amount of money. And I'm sure Tonda was over the moon. Should she have chosen to, she'd never have to work again. And she clearly planned to be smart with the money and opted to receive it in installments over the next 30 years. Neil, if you won the lotto, would you take all the money in one go, or would you, you know, go for the payout over X amount of years?
I'd take it all in one go. I would quit working, but
I
I'd carry.
Knew you would say that.
But I'd carry on with the pod.
Yeah.
You knew I'd say what?
I knew you'd say you'd go for the big cash out.
Yeah. I want it in my fucking bank.
Yeah.
Because, right, it's over what, 30 year? Say in 20 years' time, lottery goes fucking bust. I'm out then. I'm not going to get that money.
So you'd rather 5 million up front rather than like 10 over 30 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I knew you'd go that way.
I know you'd go the other way.
You're seeing the dollar signs, aren't you? And you're like, ooh.
No, but I'd rather it in my money, in my bank. So if I were to invest it or, you know. But like I said, I'd quit my job, but I'd still do the podcast.
Yeah.
And I'd probably start doing streaming or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see me going, you know, thanks chat.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah.
Smash that like button.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see you doing that.
Give me 10 gems or whatever.
What?
Fucking it. Yeah, they do that thing, don't they, where...
Is this like TikTok shite?
I think they do it on Twitch as well, don't they?
I don't know. Anyway, as often happens when someone comes into wealth, others act like greedy little bastards. And Tanda's co-workers decided to sue her. You see, the customer who had given her the winning lottery ticket, he often tipped the staff with lottery tickets.
Mm.
And her co-workers claimed that they had all agreed to split the money should they ever win.
But would they though?
Well, look.
Yeah.
This is the thing. They even had a couple who regularly ate at this Waffle House testify that they themselves had overheard the staff discussing this.
People might have overheard me saying, but I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah. Also, I mean, how many people are going to go, yeah, I'll testify for 10 grand.
Yeah.
They win. Like,
but,
come on.
But it's not only that, right? They're saying, oh, we'll split it. Yeah, if you win fucking a tenner. But if you get 10 million, that's fucking different.
Again, like I said, when money comes into it, people turn into greedy little bastards.
Yeah. For me, the worst one is when someone's died.
Yeah, no, that's fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think the court ruled in favour of Tanda or the co-workers?
Tanda.
No, the court ruled in favour of her co-workers, but Tanda wasn't having it, and she decided to appeal. And she made the right choice, as the Supreme Court ruled in her favour because the alleged oral contract was related to gambling, which is illegal.
Ah!
Yeah.
All right.
I honestly thought you'd be on the co-worker's side.
No.
I was kind of more on, like, I can understand.
Right. No, Sharon can fuck off.
Well, this is it. I can understand if they had made that agreement. I'm devastated for them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
I feel like it's very easy to say that after the fact. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So Tanda won the battle, but the war was not over. In 2002, nearly 3 years after winning the lotto, the customer who had tipped Tanda the ticket, he decided to try his luck.
I'd give him, yeah, well, that wouldn't have needed to happen. I would have already given him eighth.
Okay, well, he wasn't even asking for that. The customer, Edward, who had tipped Tanda, he claimed that they had an agreement that if she won, she would buy him a new truck.
Okay. And she didn't?
No.
Oh, fuck Tanda.
You're against her now.
He wants his fucking Raptor.
You're topsy-turvy in this. I think it was a rig truck, not a not a pickup truck, I believe. Don't quote me.
I don't know how much they are. A lot, I'd have thought.
Well, how do you think Edward got on?
I think he won.
No.
Oh, no, a bit same scenario.
No, the case was thrown out because it was clearly horseshit and he was just a fucking chancer. And I agree with that. But you straight away had an opposite opinion. I thought you'd have a different opinion with the co-workers as well. Why are you on Edward's side but not the co-workers?
Because they're not in on it. It's between Edward and Tanda.
Okay.
It's got fuck all to do with
you don't believe
Sharon and fucking Tracy.
Yeah, so you think Sharon and Tracy are purely fabricating this. You don't think for a second that they did have an agreement.
They might have, but...
Get real?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like I said, if it's splitting a fucking tenner like you would a tip.
Yeah.
But 10 mil is a bit fucking different.
Right, well, I actually saw a photo of Edward and I'll show it to you later and I think you'll change your tune, right? Right. Again, look, yeah, don't judge a book by its cover, but this fucking man, right, in court, he was wearing a shirt with a few of his buttons unfastened and a gold chain. I don't want to be, just the haircut as well, there's just the whole...
Pat Mustard.
Yes, very much that kind of feel. Like, you're a chancer.
Yeah.
By looking at you can tell you're a fucking chancer.
Might be a chancer, but he purchased that lottery ticket.
Look, it was a certain look, that's all I'm saying. You know what I mean? Anyway, case was thrown out. The judge agreed. Chancer.
Hmm. Can I just point out something? I don't like the fact what you just said. Saw a picture of him, how he went to court. And buttons undone,
mm-hmm.
chest out with a chain on.
Yeah, gold chain, no less.
Yeah. you would not fucking say it about a woman going to court with cleavage out.
No, but there's a difference between a lower cut top. If he had like a V-neck top on or something, it's, Neil, I need to show you the photo for you to understand the gravity of this look that this man was, I want to say, pulling off.
Okay.
Was attempting.
I wasn't going for a lower cut top. I was going for unbuttoned blouse.
If it had been unbuttoned, it wouldn't have been as big a deal if not for the gold chain. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you see what I'm getting at?
Okay.
You know? So again, case thrown out.
Hmm.
It's a lot of stress for Tonda.
Yeah.
With all these cases, right?
Yeah.
Now, later the same week that the case with Edward was thrown out, Tonda's ex-husband, Stacey, makes a reappearance in her life. And this was after he'd just been released from jail. It was reported that he kidnapped Tonda and forced her to drive out to a bayou. Now, while out there, her phone begins to ring. He allowed her to answer the call, but instead of reaching for her phone, Tonda grabs her handgun and shoots her ex in the chest.
Okay.
He manages to get the gun from Tonda and threatens to kill her and himself. Now, somehow, Tonda was able to convince him to drive to the hospital and seek treatment for his injury. Once there, the police were called and Tonda was safe. I don't believe either of them were charged in the end. But that's...
What?
Yeah. Now, again, like I said, I don't know. I couldn't find a huge amount more than the actual incident itself.
Hmm.
But this is a fucking lot for Tonda.
Yeah, she needs to emigrate.
Well, would you like to hear what the next challenge is for Tonda?
Fuck off.
It was the IRS.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, IRS.
Tax, yeah.
Right.
What did you think I was saying?
I heard IRA. What the fuck are they got?
My God, the story's taking a turn. Who's next to have a fucking Papa Tonda? No, what the issue was here to do with the IRS, Tonda had given considerable amounts for winning away to family members through a business which she had set up. And the IRS claimed that she owed them $1 million in gift tax. Now, I say considerable, Tonda actually gave the majority of her money to family members.
Okay.
They kind of had an agreement that if any of us were to win, we're going to take care of each other.
Yeah.
And she did just that. But she did it
through... Because she's a woman of her word.
Well, this is it. It's coming back round, isn't it? But because she did through a business, it was a little bit kind of like, what's going on there?
I wonder why she did it through a business.
A lot of people move money around through businesses.
Yeah.
Now, the case went on for years, and I'm not entirely sure which way it went. I saw a report stating that she had both won and lost. I assume maybe she was still ordered to pay, but possibly was able to get the amount owed reduced. Who the fuck knows? Either way, I have to say, I feel so bad for Tonda. This woman could not catch a fucking break.
She caught a good fucking break. 10 million break.
But I mean, is it worth it for that level of stress? The woman was kidnapped, Neil.
Oh, kidnapped. Yeah, that bit's, yeah, that's...
And she very nearly almost, if Neil was telling the story, had the IRA after her.
Yeah. Yeah, that were a kick in the shiklets. Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Poor Tonda Dickerson.
If I won the lottery, no, like, it wouldn't be one of them what goes in the fucking newspaper and all that.
No.
Can fuck off, that's anonymous. Fucking...
No, I'd never go public for that.
Vultures and leeches everywhere.
See, I would want to take care of people in my life. I would want to donate some money to different charities and things.
Yeah.
But I would want to be doing it very fucking quietly.
Yeah. This is my issue with, you know, them twats with charity buckets?
Chuggers.
What?
Chuggers.
What's it got to do with him?
No, chuggers. That's what you call them. The people with the buckets on the street.
Oh. That's Cheggers. Keith Chegwin.
Yeah, no, not him.
No.
He's also a tosser, but...
Yeah. If I have the money, I will choose the charities I'm going to fucking, you know...
Yeah.
I'm a big animal lover. Homeless. Like, I feel for homeless. But do you know when someone, when you go into shop and someone's chucking a bucket and a fucking clipboard in your face?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I've never even give that fucking charity a second thought. Like, I know it makes me sound an asshole, but do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. The thing about it is, right, when people are collected on the street, you'll have more hope of getting money. Norman has thoughts on this as well.
Mm.
You'll have more hope of getting money if you just let me throw money into the box. When you try to stop me and give me a big speech,
yeah,
that's when, you know, and obviously not just me, generally speaking, that's when people start to get pissed off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, like one of the charities I did give to was, so I thought, and a lot of people did, for
this is for soldiers, yeah.
Yeah.
And it ended up being that they were pocketing the money.
Fucking driving around in Lambos and fucking Bentleys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when they come chucking the fucking bucket at me,
yeah,
it's like, I've never even heard of you, pal. Like, I've never heard of this charity.
Yeah.
So, piss off.
Mm.
RSPCA.
Yeah.
I know that one.
Yeah.
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 Like, that was the soldier one. Homes for Heroes. That was it. I think that was what the charity were called.
Call them out 2026.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what I mean. I don't want to sound like a dickhead saying I ain't given that charity a second thought. I've never heard of it.
I know what you mean. They're going about it the wrong way, and they're actually, it's counteractive to what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
The point is you're trying to help people, and instead you're not going to get as much money, and you're just pissing people off, and there's going to be a negative association with that charity then.
Yeah.
You know? No, I get what you're saying. You word it so well.
Yeah.
You know?
I always do.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.